Raiders fans. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. Joined by our live blog director, Jamie Snow, and along with Alex Talich, we're talking some Packers football. We're taking one last look back at the win over the Carolina Panthers before looking ahead to this game with the New Orleans Saints. To do so, we have joining us on the phone Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com, as he does every Wednesday on the show. Nathan, how you doing today?
Good morning, Brian. I'm doing well. How about you?
Very good, as always. Thanks for joining us. After coming into the game so highly rated, Aaron Rodgers, I don't think we've come to not expect Aaron Rodgers to have a good game, but were you surprised with both him and Cam Newton coming into this game so highly rated that Aaron Rodgers just outperformed him to the extent that he did this past weekend?
I'm not all that surprised that Rodgers played as well as he did. I was a lot more surprised with how poorly Cam Newton played. Rodgers was barely under pressure. The offensive line did a great job of keeping the pocket clean all day. So Rodgers had the time to make the throws that he wanted. And while he did have a couple impressive throws, a lot of them were shorter throws. And then it was the receivers doing the work after the catch. The vast majority of Rodgers' yards came after the catch. And Rodgers just had to throw accurate passes, and that's what he did all day. And we've come to expect that when Rodgers is not under pressure, he's going to throw good throws. So I wasn't super surprised with Rodgers, since everything else in the offense was also clicking. I'm a lot more surprised with Newton. He was simply inaccurate on a lot of his passes. When he was not under pressure, he completed 70% of his passes, which is close to normal, although none of those passes were dropped. And then when he was under pressure, he just completed one of his passes and then was sacked those couple of times. So that was part of the defense doing a good job, and then part Newton just having an off day.
Tell me, Nathan, did Rodgers and Newton come into the game ranked 1 and 2 in Pro Football Focus ratings at the quarterback position? I know it was close, if not 1 and 2.
Yeah, if memory serves me correctly, I believe they were 1 and 2. At the moment, Rodgers is now 1, and then this game bumped Newton down to 4, but I think they were 1 and 2 coming into it.
Very interesting to see that discrepancy between the number 1 and 2 quarterbacks. Let's talk about the receivers. Between his contributions on both offense and special teams, when we can, you know, take those two together, were there many wide receivers in the league that outperformed Randall Cobb this past weekend?
There were just a couple, but Cobb did have a very good game. I was going up against Charles Gatsby all day, and he was missing tackles left and right on Cobb. There were a few receivers who did have a better week. Cobb did have a drop pass for the second straight week in there, and then we also noticed a play where he didn't have great run blocking, so that counted against him. But he did have that good tackle on special teams, so that also helped. But there were a couple receivers who were targeted a lot more than Cobb. I think in order for Cobb to have been our top-rated receiver for the week, he would have just needed to see a little bit more targets. And then there are others like Demaryius Thomas and Sammy Watkins, who also had good games and had 2 touchdowns in their performances. But Cobb definitely had a great game on Sunday.
Well, not just the individual, but the wide receiver group as a whole. Are there any teams that rival the Packers' wide receiver trio of Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and Davante Adams?
When thinking about it, there were only 2 teams that could come to mind that could at least rival the Packers. The top one and probably the most obvious one is the Denver Broncos, with Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, and Wes Walker. All 3 of them have been playing well this year. The only other one that came close was the 49ers, who really are 4 deep at wide receiver with Anquan Boldin, Stevie Johnson, Brandon Lloyd, and then Michael Crabtree's in there as well, although he hasn't been having a great year so far this year. A couple others that have 3 decent receivers, but it's only those 3 teams that have one playing at a Pro Bowl level, another playing at a very high level, and another that could be a starter on most other teams.
That certainly is a benefit to the Packers offense. The offensive line, you talked about how they kept the pocket clean earlier when talking about Aaron Rodgers. Was this the best performance we've seen out of Packers tackles, David Bakhtiari and Brian Bulaga this season? Because to me, it sure seemed like it.
Oh, yeah, I would definitely agree with you there. For both of them, it was their best performance of the year so far. This was the third game where Bakhtiari didn't allow a single pressure. And then it was his second game this season where we gave him a positive run block grade. So that gave him plus 2.3 overall grade for the game, which is the best of the season and the third best game of his career. Similarly, Bulaga, he did allow one pressure, but then he also had a couple of plays in the run game that he did a very nice job blocking the defensive end, or in one case, one of the linebackers to the inside, allowing the Packers to run to the outside of the play. So for him, it was also the third highest grade of his career and his best game since week one of the 2011 season.
Very impressive. I know Packers coach Mike McCarthy awarded both of them with the game ball following the Panthers game. We're talking to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Nathan, coming into the Panthers game, Clay Matthews was receiving criticism for a lack of production, but it sure seemed like he responded, didn't it?
Yeah, I would agree with you there as well. He was another player who bounced back and had one of the best games we've seen from them in a while. We credited him with one sack and four hurries on the game. So we haven't seen him have a game with more than five pressures in about 2 years now. So a very good game pass rushing out of him. He made some nice plays in the run game as well, although both came on unblocked. Both plays he was unblocked, but still was able to make a good play. And then also he had that pick six that was called back, that penalty, which we don't account for in our stats, but we do account for in our grades that he had the good play there. So it was his highest grade of the game since at some point in the good game. It's also worth noting that three of his five pressures came up against Byron Bell, and he's been allowing five pressures per game over these past 5 weeks. So while it was taking advantage of a weaker opponent, Matthews was able to take advantage of it.
Good to see Clay Matthews trending in the right direction. Sam Barrington made the first start of his career on Sunday against the Panthers. How would you say that Sam Barrington did in his starting debut?
Sure, he played 30 snaps in this one, and there wasn't really a whole lot noteworthy out of those 30 snaps. He did have a decent tackle for a loss, and then there were also two plays where we noted the offensive line, or in one case the tight end, blocking him to the second level, so those were negatives against him. But really there wasn't too much overly positive or overly negative, so his grade hovered or was right at zero for us, which is still better than what we've been seeing out of the Packers linebackers recently, where recently we've been seeing a lot more negative than positive, where in this one, everything basically evened themselves out.
Well, we'll take that for the first game of his career. Hopefully it goes up from here on out. Tell me a little bit about Casey Hayward and Devon House. You know, those kind of guys, I think, played a bigger role with Sam Shields not playing. And they seem to be holding up rather well. How do they stack up against other NFL cornerbacks?
They should both be starters in the NFL. We have Casey Hayward as a top 20 cornerback this year, and he's been able to do that despite playing about half the snaps as most starting cornerbacks in the league. He has more interceptions and passes defended than he has catches allowed, which occasionally happens for a cornerback in a particular game. But for someone to be able to say that over nearly half a season, very impressive. So Hayward, we have top 20 cornerback. Devon House is also someone that is in roughly the top third of the league in terms of cornerbacks who are currently getting significant playing time. He only allowed 42.9% of passes thrown his way to be caught, although he has allowed a touchdown, but they're both playing very, very well and should be starters in the league. So it's been since week two that we've seen Tremont Williams have a positive coverage grade by our standards. So while I'm not saying I think Williams should be benched altogether, but I think he should be part of the rotation once the others, Shields is back and healthy and can play his normal workload.
Nick Perry had his third game in a row with a sack. Does his rating at Pro Football Focus indicate he's showing significant improvement?
It's showing that he's at least been playing very well recently over these past three games. He's gotten three sacks, one hit, and five hurries. In my opinion, we've seen stretches of two or three games where he's played very well as a pass rusher before, and then that's been mixed with average games, and then that's also been clouded with the injuries that he's had in the past. So while we might want to see more consistent good play out of a first-round pick, when we have seen him play and he hasn't been hurt, he has been an above-average pass rusher. So the interesting thing will be from here forward seeing if he can keep that up, where in the past he hasn't been able to keep that up. So, but definitely reassuring to see him playing so well, especially this last game was the best we've seen from him in a while.
Well, lots of good stuff to talk about following this Panthers win and very little to nitpick about. The Packers have an upcoming game against the New Orleans Saints. Who do the Packers have to be concerned about, Nathan?
There's a couple of players to be concerned about. It always starts with Drew Brees. Although he hasn't been playing like a top-five quarterback like we've seen in past years, he's still playing better than most of the quarterbacks in the league. So always need to be concerned about him. He does another player that doesn't have a big name, but the running back, Kerry Robinson, who plays a partial role typically in the run game. He's been averaging 5.2 yards per carry and should be seeing at least some of the carries in this game. So he's a running back to worry about. I know Jimmy Graham's health has been a concern recently, but he's by far their best receiving option. So I'm not sure how the Packers will choose to line up against him. I would hope that they would put a cornerback up against him basically the entire game, but we'll see how the Packers decide to handle that. The Saints' offensive tackles are good at pass blocking. The interior of their line is good at run blocking, so that's what the team likes to see out of their offensive line. So it might be a little difficult or more difficult for the Packers to get pressure in this one or stop the run in this one. Going to the Saints' defense, the only consistent pressure has been coming from Junior Gallet, so Bacchiardi should have a little bit of a challenge on his hand in this one. But like I said last week, the Panthers' defensive backs weren't great. If you add up the coverage grade of all the Panthers, they were at -30.8, and the Saints have one of the two coverage units that are worse than the Panthers. So I could see the Packers, again, having a very good game passing the ball, getting it to whatever receiver they want to pass it to. So while there are a lot of good Saints offensive players and a little bit to worry about on the Saints defense, I think the Packers' pass offense should be able to counteract nearly all of that. So I think in order for the Saints to win this one or keep up with the Packers' offense, they probably need to have a turnover to win the Saints round defense.
Well, I'm looking forward to Aaron Rodgers carving up the Saints secondary, but we'll see how it plays out. Nathan, as always, thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you next Wednesday to break it all down.
Sounds good. Talk to you then.
All right. Take care. Again, Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us as he does every Wednesday here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central as we air every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. Let's talk about the news of the day. Over the past 24 hours, you know, it's been now 3 days since the Packers win over the Panthers, so Packers had their day off yesterday. I think the news yesterday was that Brett Favre will not be making what was apparently, reportedly, allegedly, an appearance at Lambeau Field later this season. He backed out on it, or at least delaying it, as I think the term is used by Ed Werder of ESPN, who first reported the news. Yeah, I mean, this came as a surprise because this was not something publicized by the organization. But the report came out that Favre and Starr were going to make a appearance at the game November 9th against the Chicago Bears, which just so happens to be in primetime, a Sunday night football game. So nationally televised, would have gotten a lot of attention nationwide. And I don't know exactly what the plans were. You know, they obviously have been kept tight to the vest by whoever was planning this. I don't know how formal the talks got between Favre and the organization, but, you know, whether they're honorary captains and out there for the coin toss or, you know, just announced on the field prior to the game. Kind of, you know, one of these events that might show a mending of bridges in Green Bay. I think people had been anticipating some sort of event like this ever since, I believe it was in August, where the Packers announced Brett Favre would be finally welcomed back into Green Bay. As we know, he has not been there since his retirement. That the organization announced Brett Favre would have his number retired and he would go into the team's Hall of Fame in 2015. So we knew all this is going to happen next season, the 2015 season. But I think people kind of knew in the back of their minds, okay, you know, it's time to have Favre come back, and maybe at some point before this jersey retirement, kind of, again, show this mending of bridges, if you will. I thought it was odd that Favre backed out of this. I've said this. So if you're reading Cheesehead TV, I wrote a blog post on it. I did a radio interview on the Big 1070 in Madison, the Big 920 in Milwaukee, the Mike Heller show. Saying how it sure comes off as Brett Favre banking on Bart Starr for a warm reception. And pardon me, I kind of glossed this over. The reason Brett Favre had backed out was because of what he claims Bart Starr's health situation, which, as we know, in September, Starr, I think, suffered two strokes and what was reportedly a mild heart attack. So, apparently he's stable, but obviously concern about Bart Starr's health, probably not something in which he should be traveling right now. And that's totally understandable. I guess the thing is why can't, Brett Favre do this alone? Or, you know, kind of taking it one step further, and something I hadn't really mentioned yet. Okay, Bart Starr can't make it. Understandable. You know, can't Brett and the Packers organization, if you really wanted that buffer player, can't you go out and do that? Why can't Brett walk out there with, let's say, which would also be a momentous occasion, how about Mike Holmgren, the coach who Brett Favre won a Super Bowl under? Or, you know, whatever, if Mike Holmgren is busy, how about the Packers' most recently retired star player? How about Donald Driver, who caught many, many passes from Brett Favre? That would be another pairing that would just get an unbelievably huge round of applause. Or even, Mr. Wisconsin himself, Mark Tauscher, who was blocking for Brett Favre for how many years? Bring any of those guys out there as the buffer to Brett Favre. And you know what? Even if Favre were to come out alone, I think the hatchet has largely been buried. I think Brett Favre would be cheered rather, the percentage of cheers to boos would be overwhelming cheers, probably 90% to 10%. Your vocal 10% minority. You know, who knows? Maybe I could be wrong, but I think enough time has passed since the events that transpired the summer of 2008 and everything since that point, since signing with the Minnesota Vikings and facing off against the Packers and all those things. You know, I think the burying of the hatchet probably happened this summer when the Packers announced the number would be retired. I think a lot of people have forgiven Favre. I've stated on here numerous times on this show, you know, I'm not a Favre fan. I think he's kind of skeevy, to tell you the truth. But all that being said, if I were present at the game, his number's being retired or he's introduced, I would politely clap, applaud what he had done as a player. I'm not going to go crazy for the guy because of, you know, some, I think he handled his exit from Green Bay in a disgraceful manner, and what he did in terms of being investigated for, with the whole incident with the masseuses in New York and settling out of court with them and not refusing to cooperate in an investigation by the NFL for which he was fined. I mean, Brett Favre is far from a role model, and I could, you know, don't have much respect for the guy, but I can commend what he did on the field of play, which I full-heartedly agree was just fantastic, amazing, outstanding, Pro Football Hall of Fame worthy, cannon for an arm, his Iron Man streak of games, all those things, and just his gunslinging, playmaking ways, all fantastic, and I can appreciate that. So I don't know why, and I think I'm personally in a minority in terms of those kind of feelings for Brett Favre, that kind of that skeevy side for him. I think a lot of people just choose to ignore that, selectively kind of ignore that. And I think the cheers would be overwhelming for him. I don't think he needs Bart Starr out there to get a warm reception. And I think, you know, okay, let's get this out of the way. Let's, even if you are booed by a few people, let's take your medicine, Brett. I think the boos will kind of maybe get out of the way during this appearance. And then during the jersey retirement, maybe they'll be gone almost entirely by then. So anyway, there's your updated thoughts on what Brett Favre did by delaying his return to Lambeau Field. But elsewhere in the world of the Green Bay Packers, on Monday, the band Pearl Jam played a concert in Milwaukee, and several Packers players were in attendance. This kind of got a little bit of attention, especially on social media the other day, as well as the website Deadspin. And I know the Packers themselves shared a few pictures on their official Twitter account, or one picture at least, with several players meeting Pearl Jam frontman Eddie Vedder. Matt Flynn, I know, Josh Sitton, Corey Linsley all appeared to be in the picture with the iconic rock star. And then even though I didn't see any pictures with Aaron Rodgers, with Eddie Vedder, he talked about on his own weekly radio show on Tuesday about meeting Eddie Vedder and Vedder, who happens to be a Chicago Bears fan, talking whether they could trade him for Jay Cutler, which was kind of humorous, and finding out that somehow Vedder is a shareholder owner of the Green Bay Packers, which is interesting. I did not know that. I didn't know whether And maybe I still don't have all the details, right? Whether he bought the stock himself or somebody bought it for him as a present or whatever it is. But that's kind of interesting. And they gave, apparently, Eddie Vedder a number 10 jersey, not so much as for Matt Flynn, who was in attendance and is a fan of their music, apparently, but in homage to the Pearl Jam album titled 10, which is one of the great albums in rock and roll history. But anyway, so that was cool to see that. So that happened on Monday. But looking ahead here, on a Wednesday, here we are, the live edition of the show on a Wednesday morning. I think what we're looking for today, the first day of practice of this week as the Packers start to get ready for the New Orleans Saints. Not that they haven't been getting ready already by formulating game plans and having meetings and video review and things like that, but hitting the practice field for the first time this week. Kind of looking to a couple guys with injury issues. The word is that Devon House is going to be ready and going to practice after exiting this past Sunday's game against the Carolina Panthers with a dislocated finger. Obviously not a huge deal there, telling the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that he will tape it up and be out at practice on Wednesday. But the status of a couple more Packers players isn't quite so sure. Something we rounded up in our Packers calendar post at Cheesehead TV on the blog this morning. I think notably, the newest injury that's kind of questionable, that's leaving a dark cloud over the Packers for the moment being, is to running back James Starks, who likewise also exited the game against the Carolina Panthers with an ankle injury and did not return. Now, it was kind of hard to tell how serious that injury was. You know, James Starks exited the game, did not return, but you kind of wonder, may he have returned had the game been in question? But, you know, the Packers were absolutely killing the Panthers at the time. The game was out of reach, so did they just err on the side of caution and not put James Starks back in the game just because to keep him healthy and, you know, they've got enough other backs on the team they could rely on for the time being between DeJuan Harris and John Kuhn late in the fourth quarter, things like that. So that could have been the case. But the guys who have had injuries, cornerback Sam Shields and defensive lineman Dayton Jones, going to see where they're at as the Packers release their first injury report of the week this week as well on Wednesday. You know, neither of those guys played in the Panthers game, both on the game day inactive list. And you have to wonder whether they're just going to simply keep these guys out until after the bye and give them that extra week of rest and you know, get ready for them to return then. That could certainly be the case. You know, without knowing the exact extent of the injuries, you know, I don't know what the Packers are going to do. I mean, certainly if they're ready to return, they're going to return. But you have to think there's at least a little bit of inkling in them where they say, okay, let's play it safe with these guys and let's just have them healthy for the stretch run of the season after you get back from the break. So, you know, Sam Shields nursing the knee injury sustained in the Dolphins game, Dayton Jones himself, an ankle injury, a sprained ankle in the Vikings game in week 5. So he's been out for a while now. In fact, Dayton Jones kind of had a setback last week in which he practiced one day and then stopped practicing the rest of the week. So hard to say where these guys are at in the recovery, but we'll learn more on Wednesday afternoon when the Packers release their injury report and Mike McCarthy has his post-practice press conference. So looking forward to that, to see where the Packers are at here. But anyway, folks, thank you everybody so much for joining us on a Wednesday morning edition of Railbird Central here at Cheesehead TV. No call to action today, unless you want to give us a review on iTunes. That is always appreciated. It helps us get the word out about the show. So if you want to give us a rating on iTunes, feel free. Other than that, we'll see you later, folks. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, Alex Talich, I'm Brian Kirvu. We'll see you later. We'll see you on Friday morning, 8:30 a.m. Central Time for the live edition next show. But we'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called Velvet Red by Conspirator on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go. We'll be right back.